on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, September 24th, 2024 edition. I'm excited for this hour with you, looking at the shifts in market dynamics, unpacking what happened in today's market, but most of all, it's about you, your questions, and furthering your educational journey. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, bringing topics to the table that ultimately you can glean lessons from to bring back to your own situation so you can make better decisions with your money each and every day. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And that's what success is about with anything. It's a consistency of action, positive action. And that's what we are here to help guide you with, okay? Now, to that end, I want to remind you of our new Invest Talk Wealth webinar coming up on October 8th, just 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from today at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So the countdown really begins, and you can head over to our website, kppfinancial.com or investtalk.com, and sign up. All right. Once again, that's October 8th at 11 a.m. That's going to be all about building your wealth through your 401k, your workplace retirement account, effective strategies for managing that type of account, and how to enhance your total retirement savings plan, okay? That's what that webinar will be all about. Now, in just a bit, we'll run down today's market performance and the show topics that we will look at today. But first, as usual, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, this is David from San Jose. Calling regarding a Vanguard ETF, VDE. Wanted to see what your thoughts on it and a good price to get in. Thank you.
All right. Looking at VDE, this is the Vanguard Energy ETF. And with, like most of the Vanguard funds, fairly low expense ratio, about 10 basis points there. Now, if you look at the holdings, it's still Chevron and Exxon are the vast majority of the holdings here. About 35, 36% of the portfolio split between Exxon and Chevron. Then we have ConocoPhillips, EOG Resources, Marathon Petroleum, Schlumberger, the largest oil service company out there, Phillips 66, an oil refining company, Williams Company, a lot of natural gas transportation in that type of business. Same with ONEOK, and then same with Valero, another oil refinery. So fairly decent diversification here, even though it is fairly top heavy, you are getting a bit of those other types of names in the industry. You know, like I said, oil refiners, transportation companies, and servicing companies as well. So I like that bit of a diversity. Oil prices are down, but they are headed higher after today due to the Chinese stimulus, which I'll talk about here in a minute. But ultimately, I think this is if you're looking for energy exposure, that's number one, right? If you're looking for energy exposure, yes or no. If you are, then this is a solid vehicle for that, okay? Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is about Microsoft and BlackRock's $30 billion AI gambit. This is a fund that they are partnering up to invest in, to create a $30 billion fund for investing in AI infrastructure, not just AI, but the infrastructure that will support AI endeavors. And its goal is to accelerate the development of data centers, energy projects to meet the growing demands for AI computing power. And this certainly makes sense. BlackRock loves to invest in infrastructure, and they have many funds that do that. But also Microsoft obviously wants the consistency of the resources in order to invest and maximize the investment in AI in general. And so it makes a lot of sense. So we'll look at that particular story and look at how that might impact certain companies, sectors, etc. Okay. Also, the Justice Department is suing Visa. I've talked about this for a little while. Visa, MasterCard, a lot of people want to own these companies. And, you know, while they have great businesses, there's the regulatory risk. And this is a very important aspect when you're buying individual companies to gauge this regulatory risk. And I've been saying for a while, there is a lot of potential regulatory risk and disruption within that space that made me weary of buying Visa at the high multiples, Visa or MasterCard, at the multiples that it's been trading at. And so we'll look at this story and how much this might impact the bottom line of Visa. And then annuity sales at record highs, but now rates are being cut. So will that continue? Will the record sales continue? We'll look at that story as well. We also have voice bank questions to play. One is in regards to the Vanguard Financial ETF. A lot of people calling about the Vanguard sector ETFs here. And then Qualys, Q-L-Y-S. We also have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. So we were going to get to all of this and most importantly, your live calls. So we encourage you and welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. We love your voice bank calls and that line's always open 24/7, but we adore your live calls. So don't hesitate to reach out and ask your question, especially if you're listening to the live stream on the website or on AM 1220 in the Silicon Valley area. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. And please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. The number never changes. It's 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk Wealth Webinar is happening online and free soon. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth Webinar, October 8th.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's take a look at the market performance for today. It was another modest up day. You had the S&P up about 0.25% there. NASDAQ was about 0.5%. The Dow up about 20 basis points. But the real story here was about China. And it looks like they are starting to stimulate once again. So the Chinese stocks were up, but also the commodity stocks were up as well. You had transportation stocks up nicely. Oil was up early in the day. It did fade a little bit, but still had a nice day. And a lot of the commodity names, you're talking about copper, uranium, gold at a new all-time high. It's so interesting. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody. Name the last asset class that was the best performer on the year of any major asset class at an all-time high, and yet nobody was talking about it. It's not in, I don't see it on the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Economist, CNBC. It's just not being discussed. And it's crazy. I've never seen it before. It just shows you how much more, I think, average investor money is left to power this move higher. This move has really been powered by the East, Russia, China, especially the Chinese citizens who, you know, used to put their money in real estate. And now the real estate market is imploding. And so what alternative do they have, right? Stocks have been down a lot, but gold continues to power higher. You also have India, whose economy continues to do well. And you know, they're big fans of gold and buying gold. And so it's just, there's a lot of tailwinds to the price of gold, including, you know, the debasement of our currency with the deficit that we have, the Fed issuing on the short end of the curve that is juicing liquidity. And ultimately, you know, the dollar has just started to weaken as of late. And so there's just, I love when something's in an uptrend and nobody is talking about it. It just means that there's a lot more room to run. And so that's, to me, is the story, the most important story, because it's not a story yet. You know, when you see it in the headlines, you see it on CNBC, you see everybody talking about it. Eh, well, it's mostly run its course for the, you know, and so you it becomes far less attractive when you see that. And so the fact that it's not on the front pages anywhere makes me stand up and notice. So I wanted to call out that, because it just really remains, it's just in a powerful uptrend. And obviously the stimulus out of China will certainly help that. And, you know, when, you know, the Fed in general is a driver of liquidity that goes towards financial assets. And we know that they're starting an easing cycle. But it's the Chinese central bank and Chinese government that typically will stimulate and drive more commodity markets. So the fact that they're just starting to stimulate there after a while where the market was wondering what's going to happen, are they going to stand up and actually try to push some sort of stimulus to reach economic growth goals? And it seemed like they weren't ready to do that, but now they did. And so that's why you saw a spike in a lot of the commodity markets today. So that was the market today. Very interesting start to this week. And so we will see as we move closer and closer to Election Day. And we're sure we'll see an October surprise. We know that. And ultimately, you have to stand up and notice when these trends are in place. Now, we've been telling you for a while that our Invest Talk audio podcast is now available in video form, where you can see mine and Luke's face, and you can also see some of the data that we are looking at for each company. And so I encourage you to head over there and check that out. And we get questions submitted to the comment section over on YouTube as well. So you can leave your comment there and question there. And this one came in from Jesse De La Cruz and said, what are your thoughts on KEY, K-E-Y, as a long-term hold? I own 2% and looking to add to about 5%. Also, could regional banks benefit at rate cuts as they have more exposure to CRE sector than the big banks? Well, that's certainly true. They do have a lot of commercial real estate exposure, but it's not necessarily true that their commercial real estate exposure is worse than some of the bigger banks. Because a lot of the smaller banks, they've lent to strip malls and regional shopping centers and things like that, that don't necessarily have huge values, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so, you know, some of them have exposure there. But, you know, those bigger buildings and city centers, a lot of times those are financed by the mega banks, and because they're, you know, they're the ones that can take on that level of risk. And therefore, those issues are, in a lot of cases, put on the bigger bank balance sheets. Now, as a percentage of the entire balance sheet of those bigger banks, commercial real estate is a much smaller percentage. So while they have, you know, a lot of times they have the bigger issues with the bigger buildings, it's not really a huge risk to them because of the diversity of that balance sheet. Whereas a lot of those smaller regional banks, you know, they have a larger percentage of commercial real estate as of their portfolio, but less of them tend to be a problem. Let's just say that. So I wanted to give that caveat. Now, KeyCorp in general, it is a smaller regional bank, about $15 billion in market cap, 972 branches in 15 states. So, you know, it's a larger of the smaller regional banks, shall we say. And it is trending positively, 87 on the relative strength scale. But I don't think it's big enough. I don't think it's big enough to really get me excited to buy it. So if you're looking for a bank, this doesn't really rise to the level where I would be interested in it. Okay, so I'd pass on KeyCorp. Now we're moving into a break, still to come in this podcast, your voice bank calls and our main focus point. So stay with me at 888-99-CHART.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about the tie-up into a new fund between BlackRock and Microsoft. They're planning to launch more than a $30 billion fund to invest in AI infrastructure to build data centers and energy projects. Okay, and we know that the computing requirements of AI are massive, and it requires the infrastructure of thousands of chips in massive clusters to achieve the amount of data crunching power to make this all happen. And this investment vehicle called the Global AI Infrastructure Investment Partnership aims to alleviate any of the bottlenecks that are happening right now. And, you know, just to help enhance the supply chain and provide the energy sourcing so that these investments from Microsoft to build out the capabilities from a software standpoint can actually be executed from a hardware standpoint, right? Having the amount of chips and the ability to power those chips, cool those chips, and keep them running 24/7. And what this partnership will do, it will mobilize up to $100 billion in total investment potential if you include debt financing. So they're providing the equity financing and then levering up the balance sheet of this investment vehicle in order to achieve these end goals. And so this is a lot of dry powder to create this this infrastructure. And so, you know, it's another vehicle that will help fund profits within the infrastructure space of AI. And I think this is less to do with the actual chips and the power that is needed here. And this is one of the reasons why you saw uranium rally big on Friday, was because Constellation Energy is planning to restart its Three Mile Island nuclear plant in Pennsylvania. And this is all to help power Microsoft's growing AI needs. And, you know, that's why uranium has had a good few days ever since, because these are the type of news items that you have to continue to expect, because they're not going to abandon these billions and billions of dollars in sunk costs that have gone into NVIDIA chips and the like just because they can't power them. You know, they're going to sit there and find avenues for cheap, consistent base load power. And that's why uranium, I think, still remains a very, very solid play, even though it did pull back in June and July pretty significantly. But overall, the uptrend is still in place, and you still have the demand here for that type of base load power. On top of that, you know, think of the utility companies, think of the infrastructure companies that can help build out the energy capacity for these projects. Those are the companies that the picks and shovels within the industries that I think will benefit the most here. And so when you are thinking of AI, don't just think of NVIDIA. There's a lot of ancillary type of businesses and suppliers that will help drive this forward, these initiatives forward. And when you have $100 billion now, and I guarantee there's more and more coming from a lot of different players within the space to help make sure that these projects are successful, at least from an execution standpoint. You know, whether or not they find a true profitable use case for AI, I think that's another question longer term. But at least in the short term, I think it's a little overblown how much money is going to just like the NVIDIAs of the world. And it's underappreciated how much money is going to other ancillary types of businesses that will support AI in general. So very interesting to look at, and we'll continue to follow this. Now, we always like our live calls, so let's talk live with Art in Menlo Park, looking at Kraft Heinz, listening on AM 1220 in the Bay Area.
How you doing, Justin?
Doing pretty well. You looking at Kraft Heinz?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking to sell it possibly because I've held it for a while, and I'm actually down probably close to 20%,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't been doing anything, so...
You're talking about a relative strength of 30. It has a nice dividend of 4.6%, but earnings projections for this year and next year are being downgraded, and the growth of that earnings is only 2% this year and 5% next year. So certainly not great. Now, this is a merger between Kraft and Heinz back in 2015. They did have some balance sheets issues, not balance sheets, some accounting issues, excuse me, which you never really want to see. And if you look at its profitability, it's pretty meek. You know, return on equity in the mid-single digits, return on invested capital in the low single digits. There's still a lot of debt, about $20 billion in net debt in its balance sheets on a $41 billion market cap. So I just think there's a lot of that free cash flow is going to pay down that debt and right-size their balance sheet. I think there are much better places to deploy your capital. And I would certainly sell this and find a better place that's treating your capital better. Thanks for the call. On the next Invest Talk, the story behind this question: how much credit card debt is too much? We'll get to that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. I've been recently looking at my Morningstar Starbucks, and I noticed that I have about 10% large cap growth, 1% mid cap growth, and 3% small cap growth. And I've been looking to slightly increase my growth style investments in the small cap space. So I recently started a position in Qualys, ticker symbol QLYS. I see it as a very well-run business with a great balance sheet, profitability metrics, and a growing free cash flow. And I don't see really any issues with the business. other than a lower growth rate in the coming year. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the business and its prospects in the future? Thank you, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
All right, looking at Qualys, and this is in the cloud security space. And they have about 10,000 customers worldwide, about a $4.5 billion market cap. But the stock trends are pretty bad. You know, relative strength at 13. And frankly, it just continues to stair step lower ever since, really from the start of the year. We started the year around $200 per share. Now we're down to 124 and change today, and it's 52-week lows, right about 119. So it's just been kind of consolidating negatively, and a lot of it has to do with what you talked about. The growth of the business is slowing dramatically. You know, last year earnings were up 42% after being up 16% the year before, up 12% the year before that, up 24% the year before that, up 32% the year before that. So, you know, you had, you know, kind of consistent 20 to 30% on average growth really for the last 6-7 years. And then this year, earnings are only supposed to be up 6% and then 4% next year. So if you go from a well above average growth rate to now roughly a nominal growth of the entire economy, you know, the multiples that it's going to trade at is just going to come down naturally. And that's what you're seeing here. And the price to sales ratio is still high. It's at about 8 times, which is, you know, anything above 10 is pretty hefty. Okay. And now it's at 8. So it's pushing on that level still. But that's after being down 40% this year. And I'm not seeing anything on the chart that's telling me this is going to turn around in the near term. I think there's still more multiple contraction to be had. Now, what you talked about, they do have a good balance sheet. Their profitability is solid at 47% return on equity, return on invested capital, all very, very good. They're taking their cash flow and they are buying back shares finally, which is good. I like that. And their free cash flow is about $255 million, but still on a $4.28 billion market cap, that's only about a 5% free cash flow yield, 6% free cash flow yield. Solid, but not amazing, okay? And so I like what you're looking at. And I like that I do think it's getting close, but it's just not there yet. There's no capitulatory volume that says to me those that are weak holders of the stock are going to sell their stock anytime, you know, they've sold their stock, right? That they've thrown in the towel. And that's kind of what I'd be waiting for. Now, if I look at a chart, a longer term chart from its IPO back in 2012, frankly, major support doesn't come in till about 108 and 110. And so it's at 124 now. And the chart trend, the bearish consolidation that it's been in for the past month or so, is simply telling me that it wants to get to those levels. And so I would be patient on it. I wouldn't start my position until that support level at 108. And ultimately, the major, major, great long-term support doesn't come in until about 85. So I might start a position around that 108, 110 level. And if it gets to 85, that's where I think I would be more aggressive in buying it, especially if I see any level of capitulatory volume, high volume, where it looks like everyone's thrown in the towel. And that is a sign that this downtrend might be coming to an end. So I'd be patient to wait on that. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about the big news today out of the Justice Department. And that was the lawsuit against Visa, alleging that it illegally monopolizes the market for consumer payments worth trillions of dollars every single year. And what they're seeking to do is open the debit card market to broader competition. And what it alleges is that they use carrot and stick approach to keep potential competitors off its turf and punish merchants that did business with rivals. And they pay companies like Apple to limit their innovation and undermine startups that tried to compete with them. And it's alleging that Visa monopolized the debit card market since 2012, so over a decade. And it keeps its share of transactions high by charging higher fees to those retailers that utilize other card networks. And they say the consumer is damaged because these high card fees can prompt merchants to recoup those costs by raising prices. And it says Visa's unlawful conduct affects not just the price of one thing, but the price of nearly everything. Because they have 60% market share in the debit payment market. And they earn about $7 billion a year in these swipe fees. And this is the next in a string of Biden administration lawsuits, antitrust lawsuits, that have been filed over the past few years. Live Nation was sued in May. You also had Apple sued in March. And, you know, this is, I think, a very populist type of trend that, frankly, I don't think will stop if no matter who is the next administration, whether that's a Harris or a new Trump administration. Why? Because back in 2020, under Trump, Visa tried to buy Plaid. It's a financial software provider. And the Justice Department then sued to block the deal, and they succeeded. And Visa eventually dropped that acquisition and bought another company like Plaid called Tink in 2022, smaller one. Okay. Now, the price of Visa shares fell 5% today, roughly. And that's because I think there's a lot of merit to these accusations. They threatened PayPal and Square with exorbitant fees if they set up any alternative type of payment network other than Visa's. And they have a deal with Apple that also said if they compete with Visa or produce a prod consumers to move away from Visa cards that they would pull their ability to run transactions. Now, federal law requires merchants to have the ability to choose at least two different unaffiliated debit card networks to process transactions, but Visa penalized merchants who picked another payment network by charging them higher fees on all the transactions processed on Visa's networks. So it incentivized them to not use multiple networks. Now, this is probably going to take a little while to resolve, but what this is showing you is that regulatory risk is real, especially in these large companies that have monopoly power, that have network effects that they are illegally protecting, not protecting through innovation, but illegally protecting. Think of Apple. Apple does a good job of innovating the iOS platform, making it better. You know, they just launched iOS 18. They're consistently trying to make it better, and they don't really do much to force people into staying on the Apple platform. It just makes it more convenient for them, right? And so there are ways to build good businesses and monopolies that have staying power without coercive practices. And it's pretty clear that Visa has engaged in that. And, you know, you add on the additional risk of crypto, et cetera. I think there's just a lot of risk in these Visa and MasterCard names that, you know, you're likely to see a diversification of transactions across the industry. And this is a good example of why regulatory risk can rear its ugly head. Now let's keep the flow going and return to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier from Philadelphia.
Hey, Luke, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Vanguard Financial ETF, VFH. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what I'm trying to expand on some more ETFs in different sectors. And I wanted to see if you thought that this one would be a good one, actually one of the top financial ETFs trying to, you know, make credit diversified portfolio here with ETF. So wanted to get your thoughts. Thank you so much. Love what you guys do.
All right, looking at VFH, Vanguard Financial ETF. This is another one of those sector ETFs. Just like the previous energy one I talked about in the show, this also has a 10 basis points expense ratio, so fairly low. But it also is concentrated in a lot of these large names, not as concentrated as the energy one. But JP Morgan is the largest holding here, around 9%, then Berkshire Hathaway, around 8.5%. MasterCard is 5.5%. Visa is at 4%, which we just talked about. Bank of America at 4%. Wells Fargo, right, about 3%. Goldman Sachs at 2%. Same with S&P Global, American Express, and Progressive, all around 2%. So that rounds out the top 10 here. 42 total names. And, you know, frankly, because of what's happening with Visa and MasterCard, I think this is not a great time, I think, to get into financials. Let's just say that. I do think there are some subsectors. I like insurance companies. I like a lot of the non-Visa MasterCard payment network companies right now. And unfortunately, if I look at these top 10, Progressive is kind of the only one. And Progressive itself is kind of on the expensive side compared to a lot of the other insurance companies out there. So, you know, it's a fine vehicle. I just think from a timing perspective, this is not the type of name that I would want to own at this moment. Okay, so I'm passing on VFH for now. Now, this is Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads, and our work continues in 30 seconds. So hang on.
Here's a quick reminder. The newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar is happening soon. Tuesday, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. The Invest Talk Wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming wealth webinar, October 8th. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. And please tell your friends.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina. I was just asking about ticker symbol YY, Joy ADR. Wanted some insight on it. I see their technology-based stock as well. They have a dividend. Want to get some insight on this company and your perspective. Appreciate your insight and all y'all do. Have a great day.
All right, looking at Joy Inc., J-O-Y-Y, and it's a company, it's a global technology company offering comprehensive innovation capabilities. I don't know what that means. That's the description. But it's a software as a service business, it looks like, out of China. And like many Chinese companies, it's down dramatically from its high in 2021. It was at $124 at its peak. Now it's at 36 and change. Now it did have a nice day today, up about 3%. Now, frankly, that's an underperformance compared to a lot of the other Chinese companies. And I do think because of the Chinese stimulus, you might get a nice little run here in the Chinese names. And this would go up in sympathy just because it is the Chinese tech company. Now, earnings are up and down. They're all over the place. $2 billion market cap. And my issue here is that I don't think it's going to outperform in the near term. You see that today. Okay. And I don't think that this bounce is sustainable in the Chinese stocks, meaning I don't think 2-3 years from now, Chinese stocks are going to be higher than they are today. Now, 2-3 months from now, that's another story. You know, as a trade, I think it can be fine. But, you know, it does pay a dividend. It's about 0.5%, nothing crazy there. There are a lot of undervalued names within the Chinese space that I think are going to run better than this. Okay, now whether you look at a Baidu or an Alibaba or something like that, a lot of those are trading at similar valuations. They're bigger. And I just think there's going to be more money chasing those type of names in a bounce within the Chinese space. But that's about it, right? That's what I would be moving my money towards, something like that. It, once again, for a trade. I still think there are structural problems with the Chinese economy, relying on exports, relying on a demographic that is now in decline. Obviously, a government that has misallocated capital in many ways. And I think longer term, that is an issue. But like most things, if you get a near-term boost from government spending, government stimulus, it can rally. It can be good for a nice little trade. And I think that's what's happening in the Chinese stocks. And I think that's all you can be looking for. But I wouldn't be barking up the tree of YY. I would look for others in the Chinese market. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Now, we get questions from time to time over on our YouTube channel comment section, and let's tackle one of those now. Jay Soso says, what are your thoughts on Starbucks for a long-term hold? Well, we were buying Starbucks down around $75 per share for clients. Now it's back up to about $95. Obviously, not as attractive up here, but we do like the new shift in CEO leadership coming from Chipotle, and so I think there is a lot of potential there for a restoration of the consumer experience that Starbucks, I think, in some ways has lost. But, you know, they have a lot of ingrained distribution with Starbucks pretty much in every corner. It's obviously a very profitable business. And I think any pullback below, say, $90 per share would be a great area to continue to pick up Starbucks. So we like it. We continue to hold it and would be buying on any major dips. Now, let's touch a bit on the annuity market. For 8 years through 2021, sales of U.S. annuities average around $230 billion a year. But in 2022, when rates started to go up, they surged to $313 billion. And then last year, hit $385 billion. And sales in the first half of this year were 19% ahead of where they were in the first half of last year. And this all has to do with fixed annuities, okay, designed to give guaranteed income streams. And, you know, this is mainly because, you know, rates are much higher than they used to be. And people are wanting to lock in those higher rates. Because relatively, it looks a lot more attractive. You know, you get 6-7% guaranteed return. You know, that looks pretty good, especially when before you were getting closer to 3-4%. And then there's the demographic shift. Next year, we will see the highest number ever of people turning 65 in the United States at 4.18 million. And so this is, from a demographic perspective, peak 65 zone, okay? And it will bring many more people to starting to rely on their 401ks and their income coming from them. And Jefferies analysts noted that they see about half of annuity sales coming from 401k rollovers, which is pretty crazy to me. You never want to buy an annuity in a 401k. But a lot of people continue to do it. Why? Because the salespeople make big commissions on them, right? And even some retirement plans are starting to incorporate them into their plans as options. And so there are multiple factors here. But with interest rates now falling, you know, are people going to scramble to lock in those rates? I think that's certainly possible. And so the new normal for annuities might still last for a while because of those demographics and relatively still high rates compared to before. Now, does that mean you should go out and buy an annuity? No. I think most people don't need an annuity, especially if you're getting Social Security. a lot of people get talked into those rates, which look relatively high. But if inflation continues to trend higher, you know, 5-10 years from now, that 6 or 7% return might look very, very low. Remember, these are long duration assets. And in an inflationary environment, long duration assets don't do very well because they tend to not keep up with inflation. Now, it doesn't mean that you should never consider them. But for most people, it's should be with taxable money. And it should also likely be just enough to, along with Social Security, cover your expenses. Because you don't want to lose that money out to go towards the next of kin, for example, or a spouse, etc. And, you know, you have to build those into the annuity contracts, and that can be more expensive, etc. And more often than not, you know, if you are buying an annuity, it should be with a small percentage of your portfolio than the whole amount, which a lot of people are doing with their entire 401ks or rollovers, IRAs, etc. And so I wanted to highlight that because it's pretty interesting to see annuity sales skyrocket in a time when long duration assets just aren't really in favor. Okay. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember to tell your friends and family about our upcoming wealth webinar on October 8th that will focus on enhancing your retirement savings and effective strategies for managing your workplace retirement account. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.